Hey, everybody, and welcome to another True Stories of Tinseltown. And I hope everybody is okay, staying safe, and not going nuts. But we hope you enjoy this show. I've got a good one for you. I have my pals, Dana DiCarlo and Lisa Sanita. They were on before. They are self-described CAG nerds, and I am an honorary CAG nerd, which I'm very thrilled about. And we are going to talk about, we discussed their wonderful book. They put it together, actually, Conversations with Cagney, the Early Years. And you can get that anywhere. I was like, go, girls, when I saw that it was on TCM website, that you could get book at TCM. You didn't know that?
No.
What?
The TCM website. Look for books. You guys were there.
Oh, my God.
Are you kidding me?
I am not kidding unless I'm seeing things. Maybe I was, I don't know.
I get on their website a couple times and tried to advertise and promote the book, but I never, oh, this is a thrill.
Well,
that's great.
I hope I'm correct because I saw it. I was like, go, girls. Because I was like, okay, they're at Amazon. They're on everywhere. But then I said, TCM, they made it. They're big. Because really.
Oh, my gosh. If we are on there.
I'd be thrilled. I hope I didn't make a mistake.
I would be too.
Because I just smiled and said, go, girls. So that's good. If I'm telling you something good and if I am making a mistake,
terrific.
I'm terribly sorry. Oh, but gee whiz. I don't know. Maybe I am. But I could swear I saw you guys on that website. And I'm sure I did.
Well, we'll have to check it out.
Yes. And so you
it's
guys.
It's here. It's here.
You see it, right?
Yes.
Congrats, ladies.
It's shoptcm.com.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Fantastic.
Gosh. That's great.
I was so happy
we
for
no
you.
Idea.
Well, I think
we
you
had
knew.
No idea.
That's so good. So I got to tell you some good news today. I was really thrilled for you. I thought you had to know. I'm like, yay, there are books up in the TCM shop, TCM. I was so thrilled for you.
And fantastic.
Yeah, so congratulations, ladies.
Thanks. Thanks for telling us.
Thank you for notifying us.
I thought I knew. Anyway, I'm going to post our earlier podcast that we did, and it was about the book and so much interesting stuff, and they had to transcribe it. You'll get the whole gist when you hear that about what they did and, you know, their personal interactions with James Cagney and why they loved him so much. We did that in the first show. So this show, we figured we mostly, I believe, talked up, and because it is the early years, I believe we talked up until the end of the 30s. So we are going to go into his career and in the 40s, 50s, retiring, et cetera. And he also was a something I didn't know. Ladies, how are you? Say hi to everybody. I'm here. I'm blabbing all over the place.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone.
I'm glad to be back, Grace.
Yeah.
Finally, I know. It's been like forever. I am
so
terrible.
Nice to talk to you.
I love talking to you guys. It's so funny. After we did the show the last time, I think we yakked for about an hour. After we did the show, the three of us, we just yakety yakked and we talked about the death and the whole nine yards, the whole funeral thing. That was amazing. So I want to get that on there because it's very interesting, I think, to the listeners. And mm-hmm. No, I just am so thrilled. I'm glad I was able to give you the good news because I could swear you had to have known. I'm really happy for you. That says a lot. TCM wouldn't put some crappy book out there. You know, so listen, folks.
Sally, I know.
Check it out, guys, because it really is a good book. You learn a lot. His wife talks, Billy, the whole thing. And it's a fascinating look inside their home and the people that they were. And great stuff behind the scenes. He talks about his behind-the-scenes stuff, which is fabulous.
Yeah, we're proud of it. We put a lot of hard work into it, and it was a labor of love, and we're so happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, so look at it. Now it's a TCM. Go, girls.
Yeah, well, for us, it was, being such big fans, we were just, just to see this and just to publish it, and it was like the most exciting thing.
Well, it should be. And it's very good. You guys did a great job putting it together. And It just is really a good read on Jimmy. And it's like you get to hear his voice and you know how he talks and you get it.
Yes,
and
you sure do.
It's like you're with them, you know, especially yes. James. I don't know his wife so well, but it's like she's very down to earth as well. So it's really fun.
Oh, she's got so many funny stories.
Yeah. And him too. I love the Edward G. Robinson one. Where Jimmy laughs. This is a funny one. You guys will hear this, and if you listen to the first one, if you've not yet, he was saying how Edward G. Robinson's first wife, was she Gladys?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, so his first wife, didn't she just? So she was talking to Jimmy. She was known as a cheating wife around town, right? He knew. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew. I don't know if her husband knew, but they did get divorced. And she was telling Jimmy that it was her first time she did it, and she felt so bad. Why would she be telling him that? What's wrong with that one?
I don't know. Maybe she was trying to get her hooks into Jim. It was her next feat or something. I don't know. Yeah. Why would she tell him
That's
that?
That's so bizarre to me. Like, guess what?
and it's a man, too. It's not even another woman telling her.
You're right. It could have been like her saying.
Secrecies.
Right.
Yeah.
It could have been like her saying, hey, I'm available.
Hey, I'm a swinger.
Anyway.
Well, you know, Robinson was kind of like the big man on campus at the time, I think. And then Jim came along and, you know, Eddie was like, you know, the one at Warner's and, you know, probably was a little showy to Jim. And Jim, you know, wasn't like that. He didn't like that kind of stuff. So I think...
he was high-hatting?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. There you go.
I never knew what that meant. It was like high-hatting. I'm so glad.
There's a lot of things I learned through his movies, the words that they used.
It's
you
so
know?
Funny. Mm-hmm. That lingo. You Somebody know? Wrote something. I don't know who it was, but they wrote about... Maybe Eddie did a little bit. Eddie Muller did some of that. And
oh, I love him.
I do, too. I heard from him, and he and his wife are fine. They're isolating in their home. And he was saying that he was going to try to tape on his new phone. And I said, just use a computer. Use Zoom or something and put lighting around you, and you'll look beautiful. But he was going to do that and try to get his his show that he does, Noir Alley. But I don't know if he has, but he's fine.
Yeah, he did something with a cocktail. Like I forgot the movie that he made a cocktail.
You know, how cute.
Fit the movie. I forget what it was. I caught it towards the end, and he did a really good job. You know, he was making this cocktail, and yeah, it was cute.
He's a cutie. He's a good kid, and I like him a lot. Anyhow, I'm glad he was safe and he's doing his thing. And ladies, let's talk about Mr. Cagney. Now I'm seeing he did quite a bunch of different things in the 40s, all different types of movies where he did it in the 30s. But I think in the 30s, he did a lot more. He did more of the gangster stuff. He kind of...
Yeah, more of the hoodlum, gangster, wise guy. Yeah.
Because
he wanted
really,
to break away from that.
He did, and he did. My goodness. The Fort...
I
love this
he didn't
movie.
Have a choice at that time.
Yeah. He didn't?
He didn't have a choice early on what he could do. No,
they just handed him the script.
Yeah.
Said,
oh,
that's
do it.
Right.
Yep.
So when he came back to Warner's in 38, of course, you know, Angels with Dirty Faces came with him, you know, because he left. And he did, you know, two other films.
The Roaring Twenties, Each Dawn I Die, which are amazing.
Well, right. But he wanted different scripts and different... He wanted to show more of his versatility, which we already knew he had. But, he did some amazing movies.
Yeah, before Angels, he did Something to Sing About, which was a musical, and Great Guy, which was more...
They're cute movies. Everyone did well in the theater, but they're cute.
The studio that he went with wasn't good. Grand National wasn't. It was a really low grade.
Yeah, because I haven't heard of it. So
no. Well, it didn't last because they paid him $150,000 and they went bankrupt in 2 years. So
So he started, and he wasn't a gang. The Torrid Zone with Ann Sheridan, who I know you guys love too. I love Ann Sheridan. I think she's wonderful. Fabulous. And so pretty. And so, but when I read about her smoking like 4 packs a day, and but what it was she said she couldn't eat. You know, she didn't want to eat because you can't, unfortunately.
Well, yeah.
That's what most of them did.
Yeah, they had to keep their waistline. I mean, what a horror, you know, to just not eat. I don't know.
I know.
Yeah, who knows what they, and every time you see, every time you listen or you read about what people are eating, it's like always bacon and eggs.
Oh, they always say
like
that.
Like at the lunch. That's it. That's all they ever had.
But there is a story with Torrid Zone between Jim and Ann. Ann had the gun, and in one scene, Jim's supposed to go for it. And she, you know, she had her finger on the trigger, and it shot his hand. And the gunpowder, like, really burned, and, you know, he had to be, you know, home for, like, 2 weeks almost to recoup. And the powder burns were so, you know, extensive that he had to get tetanus shots for the pain. And if you look on the last scene where, you know, there's a shot, and he says, she pretends that she shot. Mm-hmm. And he says, there's only one shot, and I caught it. And he shows his hand with blood on it.
With the bandage,
With the bandage already on his hand. So you see that he had his hand bandaged. And Ann Sheridan went home crying. She was so upset that had happened to him.
I know.
And, I mean, he was okay. It was nothing serious, but, you know, it was very painful. And
yeah, you know. And I'm sure he didn't try to make her feel bad. You know,
of
sure
course
that was
not.
Poor Ian.
Yeah.
But I get it. And he did. Yeah. So we did that. I like that movie. He did City for Conquest. Then he did.
We love that. We love that. That's one of our favorites.
With Ann Sheridan.
That's a fan favorite,
again.
Too.
You know what? I've never seen that movie. I've got to check it out. Can you believe it?
Oh, you gotta see it.
Bring the tissues.
So it's like a 5-tissue movie or a whole box movie.
Have the tissues with you.
That's a good story. It's really a good story. And it's just it's just the acting and him as a boxer. You know, he's 42 years old and you would never know it. You know, what he had to do to get into shape and everything.
Yeah, because I was reading that they shaved some years off of him because he was so youthful looking. Is that true?
Yeah. Warner Brothers had him at 1905.
Wasn't he 1899?
Yeah, they made him younger than he was.
Yeah. Well, he always had the baby face, so he always looked younger anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but a lot of his leading ladies were like 15 to 20 years younger than him.
Yeah.
If you really go back and look, I think Joan Blondell and Betty Davis were the closest.
To his age?
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
yeah. A lot of them were 20 years younger than he was.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, look,
you never know it.
No, because he looks so good. Mm-hmm. So that is a movie I'm going to watch because I have been during this time where you're just staying in. I'm watching because I'm such a poop. So many times I go, if I'm going to watch a classic film, I watch things over and over again. So this time, I've been watching new movies, and I'm like, why haven't I watched this? Why haven't I watched this? Why haven't I? So now, why haven't I watched that? And I'm going to watch it. So that's cool. Then he did.
He made that movie. He made that movie. You know, he made that out of nothing. Not nothing. It was from a popular book at the time or before that, and but he made that movie so good, they cut out a lot of parts on it. Of the studio cut out the heart of the
picture. Oh, that's
picture.
So horrible.
And he just hated that, you know, when they did that. But we love it. You know, he might have not liked it that much after he saw the final cut of it, but it's a fan favorite. Everybody loves it. You can tell he worked so hard to do it, as he did with everything every single movie that he did. He put his 190% into it, you know.
Yeah, he was always great. And then that's funny. So he did like three, The Strawberry Blonde with Olivia de Havilland.
Love it.
He played Biff Grimes. I love that name. The Bride Came COD. Mm-hmm. As we know, they wanted to do comedy. And that was not Betty's forte.
No, that was not her forte.
And then
it was cute. It, you know, I think he covered a lot of it.
He did.
I think you focus more on him than her.
Because it's not her, and she's not comfortable. You can see it in her acting that this is not like the part, and she wanted to do something different. But, you know, a lot of times people just, comedy is hard. You know, it's hard to make people laugh. People cry at the same things generally, but people
but he
do
was
not
great.
Laugh.
Yeah, he was
well,
great
what about
at, like,
the story with Olivia about the line in Strawberry Blonde?
What's that?
The one where that's the kind of happen I am. She had wanted that line, and then Jim said, I don't think that line is going to be suited to you.
Did she do it?
No.
No, she said no. He said she wouldn't get it.
She wouldn't get it.
It was something his grandfather used to say, and he wanted to use it. And she said, no, I want to use the line. And he said, it just wouldn't work for you. And
no.
You know, you just don't get it.
So were they not friends? Was she ready to punch him out after that and say?
No, I don't think she understood what he meant.
Yeah.
You know, it just, this line was not suited for her.
No,
you know,
and I think, she took his advice, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah, because he knows that kind of stuff. And Olivia had her own little things going on. And then the bride came COD. And then, of course, Yankee Doodle Dandy, the cutest dancer ever, I have to say, in that musical. He's so cute. Yeah. You just want to eat him up, and you love to do the dancing with him. And I do.
Yeah, but the first, before that was Captains of the Clouds, where it's his first color.
Right. Oh, it has this listed. Captains of the Cloud is listed in IMDb after. Isn't that interesting?
I don't always pay attention to IMDb.
Yeah, I know. So they did. That's his first color.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
It's really good. It was well done. You know, you get to see him in color. And he said, you know, I don't know how my orange hair is going to look on film, you know, because that was his first. And his hair looked great. He always had great hair. All the women love his hair, especially with the curls and,
so
you know,
cute.
It's long and it's messy. You know, he looked great.
They had a lot of, when they went on location to shoot that movie in Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big to-do. There's stories about it. They traveled from California. They didn't fly. They drove. The whole movie crew drove to Canada for that whole few weeks that they were shooting over there. And it was quite a spectacle. I mean, even Canada still talks about it. I find articles all over the place about it. And that was a great movie.
Another one I haven't
seen. Great movie.
Okay, so let's talk about what he was doing at the time. That's about the time he was president of SAG, right? Screen Actors Guild.
42, yes. He had a lot going on because he was doing Yankee Doodle Dandy, which was released months later, but he was doing war bond tours to local places like San Diego, in the areas where, you know, they had to raise war bonds, and he jumped right in and said, you know, I'll do it. He gave up so much time to do that. And then later he would be in England for 3 months, and he would be here in the Hollywood Caravan, Victory Tour Caravan. I mean, he did so much. That's why he really didn't do a lot of movies during the time of like 42 and 45.
I see that.
He was promoting that. And plus, you know, he had, you know, two adopted kids to raise, and he needed rest and whatnot, and Martha's Vineyard, he'd stay there, but he was always doing so much.
Oh, he got there that early. I didn't know that he and Billy had a place in Martha's Vineyard that early.
Yeah, 36.
Wow. It's beautiful.
So, yeah.
It is
so
different. I can only imagine what it was like then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was like, 2,000 people probably in the whole island?
Yeah.
Yeah. And now
there was nobody.
Like, now it's very, very trendy and actually crowding and lots of very rich people.
Well, he was even saying that it was getting crowded and it wasn't like it used to be. And he was getting disgusted with everything because they were trying to put an airport there with, you know, bigger planes. And he didn't like that. And wrote to Kennedy, you know, Ted Kennedy. And, it wasn't good for the environment. And, he was dead against all that stuff. But. Yeah, he, in running his own, you know, production company, which was the first, that was a lot to handle, him and his brother Bill, you know,
Cagney Productions. That was happening in the 40s?
Right after
Yankee Doodle Dandy, he left Warner's.
Yeah, he had signed before Yankee Doodle Dandy was even started, and he said, you know, I owe Jack one more film, which was Yankee Doodle Dandy. So he was technically out of Warner Brothers already, just making the film. So he had to get that going. I don't know how he did it. There's a lot of things, you know, with family and career, and he split himself up.
So there is a story, and you guys know it better than me, about Jimmy's thing, line on Gangsters, which is ironic because he always played gangsters. But what was that about when he was the president of SAG?
What? Repeat that, Grace. What did you about?
Oh, gangsters, real life gangsters.
Oh, that actually happened in 1939 when they were doing Each One I Die
with George.
Yeah.
Oh, with the mob.
But they tried to, you know, take him out.
Well, they tried to they wanted him out, and I think George Raft heard about it, and knew because George Raft knew a lot of the mob. I mean, he did. He, not that he was a mobster, but he had a lot of friends in the mob.
Yeah.
He found out what they were going to do, and he called it off.
They wanted to do it while filming, right?
Yeah. On the set. They wanted to drop something on his head.
God.
Yeah.
And that's what they did in Each Time I Die, except they were trying to do it to George Raft.
Yeah. But when he was president, you know, he was dead against the mafia trying to muscle in on Hollywood. So, you know, it was still going on. You know, they wanted a piece of Hollywood. And, you know, him and Robert Montgomery were later president. You know, they tried to put a stop to that.
Did they?
Pretty much, I think. You know, it wasn't as big, I guess, what they tried to do. I think they stopped a lot of it from, you know, infiltrating, you know, getting into Hollywood.
Rue Madeline, I have never seen that, and I don't. Did he play
a bad fantastic.
Guy?
No. He plays an OSS agent. It's a spy movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, during the war. It's really good. It was my mom's favorite movie of his. And I remember it came on one day and she sat with me and watched the movie again. And at the end, I turned to her and I went, oh, my God, that was a good movie. I remember as a kid. And so I got to share that with my mom growing up. But it is one of his best in the 40s, let's just say.
Yeah. Then he did The Time of Your Life. This was with his own production company and with his brother, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like that movie. You know,
not many did.
It's based on a play, and it should stay a play. That's how I feel about that movie.
That's where it should have stayed, right? It had no place in a theater. And they paid a lot of money for that script, too. And, you know, he said, I don't know why it didn't do well in the box office. We had a good cast. But it wasn't his type of movie.
No.
He never understood that. You know, he wanted to try to break away from the tough guy image. And it was hard because people wanted him smacking people around, you know, and being the tough guy.
You know what? I don't think anyone could have played that role because it's just not something that should be a movie.
It's
a theater thing, 100%.
Right.
They did the movie. It didn't do well, but the family was never resented that they did it. They were proud that they did it.
I'm sure.
Yeah, Gene was in it. Yeah. It was like a family affair.
Yeah, and, it was, you know, they, they didn't think that, it was an experience.
Yes, and I can see that they would be proud of it. And I'm sure he was upset that it didn't do as well. But, when you're doing something like with your own production company, make it and it comes to life. I think that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But after that film was White Heat. Cody Jarrett. What a wonderful film. Did he want to do that? Or was it like he was obligated to do that?
Yeah. He needed to do that. He needed money for his production company because it was failing. And he asked, Jack for X amount of money. And he was like, are you kidding? And he was like, no. And he put a lot of his own things in it to make it what it was. The character was just, plain gangster, but to act crazy and have a mom, the fiction, this whole thing with his mom. And, he added it all in.
No, he improved everything that he did, especially in this movie. It was just the same old kind of script.
He had a knack with characters, like how they should be. Before, the writers or directors or anything, he created, even every gangster you see, they're all different.
Oh,
they're
Cody,
not the
yeah.
same.
No, Cody was his own kind of cray-cray. He was definitely nuts, but so was his father. Didn't his father die in an asylum or something? I mean, he had that kind of, it was sort of passed on to him. But it was a wonderful movie, and it had the fabulous, who I know you guys love as well, Virginia Mayo. And Steve Cochran, who I have to do a podcast on because he is something else, and his death. Mm-hmm. Wow. Still people think it could have been murder. But this is such a great movie. But I always wonder, Mata Hari and people like that. And I know they're doing it for a good reason. The guy, what's his name? Who played the copper who infiltrated the jail and became Edmund O'Brien.
Yeah.
I would feel terrible doing that. But they would never hire me. I couldn't do it, Even though he's such a vicious, horrible killer. I know, but I just
betrayed him.
Yes.
Yes, he's Cagney. He puts in every one of his movies, if you really observe, he puts these little things in. All the time, if you watch, he does things just to make it so that people will remember it. Maybe some people don't, but we do. In White Heat, you can see in the beginning when he's got the coffee cup.
Mm-hmm.
If you see it on his pinky, he has a ring on there. He's wearing a ring.
I never noticed that.
And so, in the next scene, he's not wearing it.
Aha.
So I've always said to Dana, I'm wondering, he did that on purpose because that's what he did. He just did things like that,
Because
Cody Jarrett really didn't wear jewelry, but in this scene, you'll see he has a pinky ring on.
And it's just the next scene, it's not like
next scene, it's not there. It's the same scene, but of course, the editing, you can see it's different.
That's funny,
Same thing. Watch it. He does that in a lot of his movies.
I watch a lot of these things, and I get mad because, people have a certain job to do to keep it, their job is specifically to keep everything, everything, like the ring would either come off or not come off or whatever. Or, I see people, and I'm like, God. I'm watching them with their blue jackets and they're saying, and you see white. And it's like, why don't they get there and brush off their dandruff? For goodness sakes, it really bothers me. Isn't that all? But I notice everything. I would be great at doing that because I noticed, in one scene, there's no underarm stain, but, a couple minutes later, there's this huge pit stain.
Yes. If you're an observant movie watcher, and you watch these things, especially when you're a fan of someone.
Yeah.
So, and knowing that he was known for doing that. Also, he was
known for
doing that.
What a little devil, because
he does that in a lot of his movies.
He was like a two person, he really just got worse as he got older. The mental illness overtook him.
Make something important, that people would take it home with them. And maybe, you know, I don't know how many people saw that or even noticed it, but it's there.
I got to check it out because that's one movie. Yeah, I have to see about twice a year, and I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
she got her. Great. He got her in the back. I love that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's especially when you know he with Virginia Mayo too. She loved working with him because she said he would add all these things to the scene to make it better.
I read, you know, he's the one who said, "I'm going to kick the chair from Virginia."
Kick the chair into you.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, she just said, you know, let's because these movies, you know, the scripts were probably so boring. And he, you know, after reading, he's like, you know, we gotta make this interesting here, you know. And he was a genius at doing that.
He was. Yeah. And that was a great scene. I mean, you think of that scene and
because you don't expect that in that scene. You don't expect him to do that. And boom.
I know. But double boom on Virginia's buttocks. Yeah. So I don't know about that. So he basically, when did he buy the place in New York?
Oh, upstate?
Yeah.
He bought property probably in the early 50s. I don't think he moved into his house until, what, 55?
Yeah, around that time, yeah.
But he probably started building.
Yeah.
A couple of years before that. But that was his goal. That was where he wanted to go. That was, you know, New York.
Starlift.
Yeah, he wanted to come back
home. I don't blame him, but not home, but come back to his home state. Starlift.
Yeah.
To impress a movie star, U.S. Air Force Crewman Prudenzi is soon to see combat. When his leg gets out, chaos ensues.
He just has a cameo scene in that
movie. Oh,
yeah,
I see. It's Gordon McRae, Virginia.
It's cute.
Mayo.
It's probably it's the best part of the movie.
Of course.
Yeah, it's kind of like a favor he did for Doris Day, because it's her thing.
Yeah, and you then know. He did Seven Little Foys, I Love Lines, Mr. Roberts, Run for Cover, Love Me or Leave Me. That was a huge change of pace for Doris Day. Did they get along really well?
Oh, yeah. Doris Day said that Jim was her favorite. And when she was doing a movie with Cary Grant, and he asked her, he said, "Who's your favorite?" And she said, "Jimmy Cagney, and you're second." And he said, "Well, at least I'm second to Cagney." You know, yeah.
Yeah, no, he loved her for that. He picked her for that movie.
Ruth Etting.
He picked her for that role.
And this is based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he gave her top billing, too, because he said it's really about her life. So he was very generous, you know.
That is very
like that.
Generous. And Doris, whom I love, I happen to love Doris for a lot of her movies. That one, she did a good job, I thought.
Well, yeah, he felt that she was great in that and that she could do a role like that. Because then afterwards, she did the Pillow Talk thing. You know, which he felt that she could have done more serious. I mean, she did make a couple of serious movies.
Midnight Lace.
Right, right.
And Julie, which I hated, with Louis Jourdan.
You know, but she was very good in with him. They were excellent chemistry together.
They did indeed. So we're getting into that. And basically, he's doing his shows. He's leaving. He's best buds with Pat O'Brien, correct? Is that one of his best buds? The other one, is that what's his name? The other Irish.
Frank McHugh.
Right, who was
Frank McHugh,
Going My Way in so many wonderful films. He was a really great character actor.
He was.
He always added so much to every film he did. He, you know, when he came in, I mean, this guy, you never forgot him. He's so great.
No,
it was great when they worked together because they were friends for so long that it just became natural for them to work together.
I remember him very well.
Yeah.
And the one with Gladys George and
Roaring Twenties.
Yeah, the Roaring Twenties, Priscilla Lane, the whole nine yards. Unrequited Love, Gladys George's Unrequited Love for Jimmy, and Jimmy's Unrequited Love for Priscilla Lane.
Yeah, we all hate her. we all really dislike her.
How dare
Oh, my
they?
God. The fans do not like that character.
Well, yeah, because he was so cute, you know, when he came. And it was heartbreaking. Yeah. And then, like, she actually wanted him to risk his life just for her.
Yeah, you know, like, just use them and, you know, just let him walk into, you know, Two Gun
into his
Bogart.
Yeah. That was horrible. That really bugged me because it's like, you know, you have some nerve, lady. You know?
I know.
I kind of agree with your fan people because I didn't like that either. And I'm like, huh? And I love Gladys George, who was trying to, like, say, you know, you don't have to do that, blah, 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 whatever. You know, she really loved him. And
yeah, that's classic.
Yeah.
It's such a classic.
It is a wonderful film. And I have to say, I would have just said, you know, go to H-E double toothpicks, toots. You know? I wish he did that. I wish he really did that. But he didn't, which really gets me. So in this period of time, and he gets the house in New York. In the 50s, he's getting... Oh, he does Kiss Tomorrow Goodbye, which is his production company with Barbara Payton, who did an incredible job. She was very good in that.
Yeah,
they chose her. They chose her. And this is someone my dear friend John O'Dowd wrote about. And what a life she had. But she got that part. And unfortunately, I think she did The Bride of the Gorilla, which is actually... She could act, but, you know, the other stuff was there, and they had a really nice chemistry.
Yeah, she was perfect for the part, I thought. You know,
That was her best part.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. Do you think that, you would know, was that film a success?
Yeah.
Somewhat.
Yeah. It was successful.
It didn't, because White Heat had just come out 2 years before, so it kind of competed with that. So, you know, it's a great noir. I mean, it's a really underrated film. But years later or before, maybe, it was kind of right after White Heat. So it always was compared to White Heat, but shouldn't be.
No,
it's
at all.
It's different.
He is he's a totally different guy. There's no Virginia Mayo. It's Barbara Payton, who is much younger. When you think about it, was she like 30 years younger than... than him?
Yeah, something like she was 20.
He was
19,
definitely. She was maybe 22.
Yeah, something like that. And he was 51.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
But they were good together. And, you know, she.
Yeah.
Well, that was popular to do that with men back then, too. That was pretty common.
That never changes. It's still popular with men today.
Yeah,
dump the wife, go for the young tootsie.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, he was a pain.
And he said he was going to knock him on his ass, which at several points I would have been very happy to do.
Yeah.
So after this movie, he retired.
Yeah, for years he was always saying he was going to retire. You know, he had enough, you know.
Well, I think that movie exhausted him. The movie exhausted him. They filmed it in Germany. You know, he was getting up there, and he always in the back of his mind. I think he did not enjoy his profession. He always said he liked the people he worked with. It was great. He made money at it. But if it was his first choice, he would have never. That wasn't his passion.
That's funny.
So,
what was
I think
passion?
It exhausted him. He loved horses. He loved painting. He wanted to be an artist. He was, you know, he had a lot of other interests.
Yeah.
He just was exhausted. I read so many articles on that movie, too.
Yeah.
And it was just a lot of stuff going on at the time. And he just, between the experience he had
with Billy Wilder.
Yeah, Billy Wilder was not.
He was mean to him.
Yeah, it wasn't a pleasant experience.
Because he's used to getting respect from the people, you know. He's deserved it. He worked for so many years, and he's a great actor. And it's funny because Billy Wilder, when he did Some Like It Hot, he said, "I when we were filming, I was glad to go home to my wife, you know, because Marilyn was so bad," which was very rude.
Wow.
Very rude to his wife. But he said,
you know,
after he saw it.
people always feel sorry for Marilyn, and of course she was great, but Marilyn was, you know, not that professional.
She has a lot of things going on with her. Wasn't there.
So
a lot of insecurity, and she always had to have those horrible women hanging out telling her how to act.
So everybody else had to, you know, wait.
Yeah.
You know, and it, you know, Cagney was the type, well, I'm doing my job. Let's do it. Done.
Yeah, let's go home.
Yeah, he didn't want to be fooling around, and he didn't want to, you know, I mean, he was generous, and he was, you know, friendly, and he loved everybody, but basically he wanted to be done. He just, you know.
Yeah, and he had been doing it for so long, really. You know, it's a long time.
Mm-hmm. No, he knew, and then he got a letter. Oh, he was doing a scene, and it was so dark inside the studio, and it was so nice outside, and he got a letter with a photograph from his friends. They were using his boat, and he saw them on the boat, and they were, you know, they put a caption underneath saying, oh, you know, so glad you're working, this and that. And there they are,
having a
great time. And he was just like, why am I doing this? I could be on the boat and I could be doing this, and, you know.
And he's not going to, you know, be on the breadlines. He made some dough.
Right.
He could do it. He had property. And but amazingly enough, he did come back in 1981 and do Ragtime.
Yeah.
That was exciting.
It was.
I thought it was great, you know.
I've never seen it.
Oh, we you know, here you are, you're a fan, and you've never seen a Cagney movie on the big screen. So all of a sudden, you know, you're now 1981, when the movie came out, we're Ragtime, you know, James Cagney, oh my God, you know.
How much did he have? Did he have a big part, or was it kind of small?
No, it was small.
It was a small part, but it was like the best scene in the movie to me.
Cag nerd, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Well, you know what it is, Grace, when I went down the city with my mom and my aunt, because my mom wouldn't let me go alone, and because, you know, the 80s was, well, New York City was tough back then, and waiting in line and seeing the line around the corner and seeing his name on the marquee, it was like a dream.
How cool then, was that for you, know, because you're such a fan?
Yeah, and we're waiting, and when you get in, and it's like, okay, the movie's going, like, okay, where is he? Where is he? When's he coming on? When's he coming on? Because I was getting antsy. And then he comes on.
Yeah.
The crowd went crazy. You couldn't even hear the words. There was whistling and clapping and yelling that we had to go see it again, because it was so hard to hear him. Every time he came on, everybody was whooping it up.
How fun, though.
No,
it was so much fun.
It was so exciting. I remember, too. I went to the movies with my aunt also. It must have been aunts taking us to the movies. And then his scene, all of a sudden, people like were couldn't wait. They couldn't wait for him to come, for them to see him on the screen. And they, the applause, and wow, they were whistling.
That must have been fun.
It was.
Pat O'Brien was in it too, right? I'm looking now at the cast.
Yes.
Pat O'Brien. Who did Pat play?
They kind of made that part for him because they wanted him to go with Jim. Mm-hmm. I think it was, he needed someone, I guess, to pal around with or something, mm-hmm. that, you know, a friend.
Yeah, to keep him company.
Sure. I mean, he was going to be there for 3 months England, which I thought was really ridiculous. They could have filmed in New York. You know, they could have done anything.
Why did they need him for 3 months if he didn't have a big part?
I don't know.
Well, they did film partially in New York. They filmed a scene with him in New York and Brooklyn, but they didn't use it in the movie.
No, it didn't make sense. They could have, you know, there's films, scenes with him inside. They could have replicated, you know, I don't know. I thought he was kind of old.
Yeah, I thought that was a long trip. And, you know, they went on the QE2 on the boat to get there because he wouldn't fly.
Yeah. But he said they treated him like royalty.
I bet. Because
sure.
He was royalty. He was royalty.
Yeah. The reception they got getting off the boat, it was incredible.
Yeah, he said something about being a superstar or something. Or what do they call him that he had a quote?
Oh, he doesn't like the word. He didn't like that word.
He said,
They don't call certain people certain superstars who do different things. And why should he be that kind of guy? But he is.
Exactly.
He was
a shy guy. He's a shy guy, and he's not, you know, he wasn't showy. He wasn't full of himself. He was from that generation. You know, he didn't brag. He hated the bragging.
Well, a lot of people in that generation did brag, too, so. He wasn't one.
Yeah. Wasn't that type of man, you know?
Yeah, he was humble.
Yeah.
And grateful, I'm sure, that he got such a great career. And how nice it was for his fans to see him in widescreen.
Yeah. Nice. That was a real treat for us.
It was great because then he was doing interviews with shows and you got to see him and hear him talk. And it was just every clipping was being cut out and everything I had, you know, a VCR and it was being taped. Like, had the one TV downstairs with the VCR. So I had notes all over the TV. Do not touch.
You're so funny.
You know, because I wasn't home because, you know, my brother, sister, and my mother was like, oh, the Yankees are on or whatever. It's like, no, do not touch.
Earlier, when we were younger, we had to put our alarm, set our alarm to watch one of his movies.
Yeah, we used to get up early.
And then when they had the VCR, we taped it. We taped the movies.
And you guys became fans when you were about 12 years old, both of you.
12 years old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The same movie, Angels, Dirty Faces.
That's so funny. It's so funny how fate and everything brought you two together. Which is
amazing. We only lived, four towns over from each other.
Yeah.
We were close.
Terrible Joe Moran was his last thing.
Yeah.
I never saw that. How was that?
If you want to watch it, to see it, you know, Lisa sees it. She's watched it more. I watched it once on TV, and I cried during the whole thing. It was just...
Sad to see him so old or something?
Yeah.
Because they cut, they cut his voice out of it.
Ah.
They have somebody else dubbing his, you know, impersonating him.
That's awful.
And it's there terrible. Are parts of the, and I think that if they didn't do that, it wouldn't have been so terrible. I mean, because, you know, without his voice, how can it be a movie? How can it be him?
That's really rude. That's very rude, too.
You know, he had, a couple strokes, and they thought, geez, are we going to be able to do this?
Yeah.
And it did affect his voice. And just, it was kind of a...
84?
82. No, 80.
He was, when he did that movie?
You mean Terrible Joe Moran?
Yeah, what year was it?
No, it was 84. It was 84.
So he was 85.
Yeah. It came out in 84. They filmed it. Yeah, he was 84.
Yeah.
They filmed it in the fall of 83.
So he had already had a couple of strokes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And he had one right before that.
How
horrible.
They didn't know what they were going to do, and it was, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they said, you know, it's good for his health. I mean, come on. You know, the man is 84. He just had, three strokes, and you're pushing him in front of the TV.
Not even using his voice, so isn't that swell? Yeah.
It was horrible.
It
was
just
horrible to see.
Yeah, totally a user thing.
So I have the movie, and it's still in its wrapper. I have not opened it.
I remember seeing it on TV. I was excited because I thought, wow, Cagney's going to do a movie for television? You know, and I didn't know, what to expect. You know, I remember watching it, and then I have the DVD, and it's hard to watch.
Yeah, it would make me sad too, and especially it would make because Tom and Dave, who came on my show a couple times with the 70 celebrity interviews, and they met Cagney, and of course he was. Their favorite as well. And then they met him once, and then they met again after the stroke. And it was, you know, he was trying his best. He was trying his best. And it made them very sad to see this wonderful, vital person. But, you know, we do get old, and God help
us.
No,
you do. You do. I mean, it's life.
It is. Yeah. So then after that, he went home. And what actually and when did he die? And what did he die of? And was he home when he died, or was he in the hospital?
Yeah, he had a heart attack. He had congestive heart failure because he had a heart attack in 83, 84, right? Wasn't it in Maine? I went to visit Lisa. Was it 83 or 84?
I think it was 84.
Yeah, and the doctors didn't even think he was going to live. So he had congestive heart failure and all the strokes and diabetes and neuritis and sciatica and circulatory issues. I mean, even gout. I mean, Marge said he's got so many things wrong with him. So he had a heart attack, and they sent him home. And they knew, you know, this was it.
Oh, they sent him home so he could be in his own home when he died.
Yeah, that's
what I'd want to do. I wouldn't want to be in the hospital, that's for
sure. Yeah, no, he wanted to go home.
And a couple weeks later on Easter, he passed away. And which was the worst Easter for any Cagney fan who was around. It was horrible.
And his wife,
well,
Billy.
Well, you know what? We knew it was coming.
Yeah.
That's the thing. We knew it was coming. Yeah. So when I saw it, I was upset, but I knew.
And he was at peace because he was going through all these horrible health problems.
Yeah, he was suffering.
It wasn't fun. You know, it wasn't a
fun. No. And, you know, with all his strokes, even years, 5-6 years before, he couldn't do what he used to love to do.
And that must be so frustrating. I can't even imagine.
And for him to not be able to sit still, and all of a sudden you're like in your wheel-bound chair.
His legs. He couldn't
really move and do the things. And his sight, you know, went on one eye. He was kind of blind in one eye. So a lot of things, his reading and painting, he couldn't do. So
Dana has a friend that was was he in the police department and he carried Jim in the chair?
Yeah.
Tell that story.
Yeah, it was Night of 100 cool. Stars, and I was out in the front watching all the stars, and it was so much fun. It was freezing that night, and we waited and waited, and you know, we didn't see Jim, and so we still, you know, stayed. And finally we went home, and lo and behold, one of my clients, because we were talking about the book, he's like, oh, Cagney, he was a cop in the city. He said me and four buddies were on duty that night, and they wanted to take him around. They didn't want anybody to see him because that was a big surprise at the end.
Oh, was he the surprise guest? How cool.
Yeah, he was the surprise guest. And so they took him around, and there were stairs, and they were kind of looking at each other like, well, what do we do? And so he said, why don't we just carry him down in the chair? And they carried him down, and he said to Mike, he said, you know, thank you guys, you know, for being here, and, you know, thank you. And he impersonates him. He's so funny. And so they carried him down, and I was like, wow, you were there? And it's like, yeah. He goes, you know, we were talking about that, because now he's a lawyer. He said of all the stars he ever met, he was the favorite.
I would have loved to have been him. And it's so nice that you two got a chance to. And so when he died, and Billy outlived him by 5 or 6 years, didn't she?
8 years.
Oh, my. How old was she when she died?
She was 95, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. These two kids. Well, he was a scrapper. But you know, you guys told me stories, which I thought was unbelievable, and just so much how you two were entwined with him and with each other. So why don't you tell us about Jim's
funeral? Yeah, Lisa, you go first, because you were at
and burial.
Oh, okay. When I read, and, you know, the news, they were saying when they were going to have the funeral, I was working in Manhattan at the time, and, you know, I figured that morning of the funeral, I'm going to go to the funeral. I have to go. Now, I don't know what I'm going to expect, but I'm going to try. So I took the subway and took the train to the subway. I don't know, I even remember how, whatever. I know I got off the subway, I guess, and I was walking, and I had to turn up 96th Street. Because that's where
I was going to ask you where he was.
St. Francis de Sales.
Uh-huh.
St. Francis de Sales. So I turned up the street, and now I'm like, oh, my God. I looked up from a distance, and I see, like, crowds and crowds of people. So, like, my heart is beating. I'm like, oh, my God. You know, it's you know, now you're at a funeral of your favorite movie star of all time, you know.
Yeah.
So I walk up, and I'm with this crowd, and, I thought, maybe I can go in the church, but you couldn't. It was blocked off.
Yeah.
So I waited across the street with all these people. It just was, and the service was still going on at the time. So this must have been like 11 o'clock. So I'm waiting across the street, and I'm watching, everybody's watching. And the people that were, the people standing out there, there was only one thing on everybody's mind. And no one said anything. But people were talking, and they had Entertainment Tonight, and they wanted me to be on television, and I was too scared to even, they asked me a couple of questions, and I answered them, and I'm like, no, I don't want to be on TV. It wasn't my,
That's a shame.
I was young. I wasn't gonna do it. So now everybody's waiting out there, and no one, we all know what we're going to do, but no one talks about it.
Yeah.
So the doors open up, and, people start coming out, and we see the casket come out, and all of a sudden, everybody just starts clapping. It was like the New York City. It was like thousands of people. We just started clapping. And even the priest who knew Jim and who did the eulogy said he never experienced that. He never saw that before.
I can imagine.
Where people are walking out. So we see Marge is holding Willie, and Dawn, they're holding Willie. And she was like so devastated. So tiny.
She's so always tiny, been a tiny little woman. Tiny, tiny thing, yeah.
She's mm-hmm. walking down the steps of the church, and they're holding her because, she can only contain herself. And everybody's just clapping. And it was so amazing. It was just, I've never seen anything like it.
And it was spontaneous. It's like because none of you had said, okay, we're going to clap. It just was a spontaneous.
No, you didn't. No one said, when they walk out, we're going to start clapping. No, it was just like they knew he was a New York boy. It was just like he was our grandfather. It was just we had to pay our respects and we had to clap.
Yeah, it was
the applause was unbelievable. So it was in people. Now, you can watch it on TV. You can see on TV how many people there are.
I went told me about it. It was beautiful, actually.
And it was great. It was just, you just felt that's what you had to do.
And you wish that he could see
agreement.
It. Because he didn't know how beloved he was. He never believed it.
Well, that was it. People around you, they were crying. But when he came out, the loud, I've never heard a clapping like that. For somebody,
you saw people on the roofs, the hard hats.
They were coming out of the windows.
How beautiful!
It was nice. It was really, really nice. It was. He deserved that.
Yeah,
he did deserve that.
Tribute.
Lovely.
Yeah.
And that was my experience.
And Dana.
Well, I thought, going to the city would be more difficult since I lived only 20 minutes from Gate of Heaven. I said I have a better chance of going there.
So where was Gate of Heaven?
In Hawthorne.
Ah.
So a friend of mine said, are you going alone? And I said, yeah, I'm not going to work today. She said, I'll go with you. So I stopped at the florist and I got 6 red roses. And so we get there early. And we're in the back of the church, and we see where the crypt is open. Mm-hmm. And I walked over, and I looked in it, and they had, the BBs for, the casket to roll in. And I kind of stuck my hand and got one mm-hmm. and walked away. And then people were just talking, amongst themselves. And one guy, he was a worker. He came up to me, and he said, are you a Cagney fan? I'm like, oh, obviously, And he said, did you know him? And I said, no. I said, I just met him. And he walked away. And then Channel 4, the camera came over. And he was like, oh, I heard you met Cagney. I was like, yeah, I didn't really feel like talking.
Yeah, you were sad.
I didn't really, he didn't say, do you want to be on film or anything? Yeah. He just came over. They weren't on or anything. And then a few minutes later, this tall man with a you know, black suit, slicked black hair. Mm-hmm. You know, was, well, I thought it was a funeral director. He looked at inside the crypt and he talked to the man that I was talking to, one of the workers, and I'm looking at them, and then they turn and they look at me. And this gentleman comes down the hill and he says, are you the one that met Cagney? And I said, yes. And he said, I'll take your flowers, so it'll be with him forever. That's so he so took my sweet. Flowers, and he went back up the hill, and he shoved them in as far, because he was tall. He was like a six-footer. He put them in deep, and I didn't know who he was at the time, because Don wasn't really Don Zimmerman. It was Don Zimmerman, Marge's husband.
Ah.
He really wasn't, you know, there was no pictures of him that I could recall.
Yeah.
And so he, I said, okay, everybody started going to the front because the limos had arrived and we saw the casket and Ralph Bellamy. And it's a very small church, you know, it's round and you couldn't go in. And there was a roped off area. There was about 30 people there. It wasn't a lot of people and everybody was carrying flags and you could hear a pin drop. Like it was just so silent. And we waited and waited. And then we just, after a while, just, you know, left. You know, some people were looking through the windows and saying, oh, I wish I got to meet him. And so we just, you know, we left.
But then how about beautiful 2 months later, go on.
Yeah. So about 2 months later, I used to go every so often. I just had this urge and I would, you know, get a red rose and tape it to the crypt, you know, you're not supposed to, but I do. And I was with my sister and I said, Maria, go down this road. You know, I want to go to the cemetery. And she goes, all right. So she was in the car and I see Mrs. Cagney and Don and Marge there. So I was around the corner. I was like, oh my God, what do I do? You know? And they were kind of holding her up and she was
That's
dressed
so
in black.
Sad. I mean, they were soulmates. They were together for so long.
Yeah, it was really, and they were dressed to the nines. And, you know, I had my shorts on and, you know, it was summer. And I backed away and let them grieve and do whatever. And when they left, you know, and then they drove by, I waved. And then, you know, I don't know if they saw me or not, but, you know, I just kind of respected their space. I didn't feel like, you know, I wanted to say, oh, hi, Marge, do you remember me? You know, kind of thing. But that was it, really.
And it's so funny how you guys were both at the funeral, but indifferent. You were at the gravesite. You were at the
yeah,
the
we
church.
Were meant to, yeah. And then we met on Facebook on a page, a Cagney page.
So how long
we
ago couldn't was
believe,
that?
We couldn't believe that we, you know, once we got to talking, we couldn't believe. Like, we lived so close to each other, like the biggest fans, the same time that we became
12
fans.
12 years old,
and,
yeah.
And then we were both at the funeral in different places.
It's amazing. You know? You two were fated, and he brought you two together, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And you two did a wonderful project doing his book.
It is, because I was, you know, when you grow up and you are a fan
of classic film,
it can be
exactly.
whoever. You don't believe that there's another person that's like you.
Yeah.
You know, so, and people would say to me, oh, you know, you're big. Well, my mother, my sister loves Cagney, and you don't, I don't know when, and I didn't know anybody else, really.
And they were
because
all older.
I know.
At that time.
That's why people that are shocked, you know, because they thought, you know, they did that too with me, because, you know, I remember when I was married and my next father-in-law, he was a stagehand and he did a lot of stuff. He met a lot of the old stars and stuff. And they couldn't believe I knew all the movies. I knew the names. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I'm in my 20s and he's like, what are you? And they were like, wow, of course they loved me because I knew these things even better than they did. But
yeah,
I never really found anyone until later on in my life. None of the men I've in my life, except for one I went out with for a little while, like classic films, you know, so it is hard to find when, but there are so many of us, you know, there are so many of us. When,
well,
like,
now, sure, because now we have the social media, the internet, you can find any group that you want, any person you want,
and
the same people, you know, you find people that have the same interests.
It's so wonderful because I've met so many great people. through my podcast, through Facebook, like you and Lisa and Stone, and of course our lovely friend Anthony, and everybody. I mean, I've met so many wonderful people, and it's so much fun for me to talk to people about movies and our favorite actors. It's a blast. It's just something I never had in my life, and now I have it, and I love it.
Well, the movies are such a part of our life, you know, and it's so personal sometimes. So, and to find someone else that has the same feelings.
When did you guys actually find each other? What year was that?
I think what, like 4 years ago?
Has to be maybe more, maybe almost five.
When did 2015, 2016?
And you two had so much in common. It's amazing to me. And then you end up doing this book, putting it together, and now you are in TCM.
Yeah, well, we kind of knew each other.
I'm so happy for you guys. I can't believe you didn't know.
No.
I really was. I said, yay! Go, girls. I was so proud of you.
Yeah,
so to me, you made it. You really made it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's so great.
I know. It's just a story within a story, almost.
It is.
Know?
It's amazing, and how you know you guys. How many followers do you have on your Jimmy? And it's a wonderful website, guys, for CAG nerds or
on the Facebook page, over 3,000.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And these are people who truly, truly love him.
Yeah, and they're great people. I mean, I got to meet many of them, and some I never met, and we're very close.
I know.
And
that's so nice.
They're the sweetest people, and I love them.
But also, you meet there are people there that have met Jim, too.
Yeah.
That come on, and they're like, oh, I live near him, and I used to see him, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable how many people knew him.
Yeah.
I would have
And they have little stories. They have little stories.
Which makes everybody thrilled because they can hear their little stories, just like everybody's hearing you guys' story. And you're going to love this because this is, you know, a companion. First, we did the first show. This is the second show. And, you know, it's all going to come together about the beginning of Jimmy and the end. And it's a wonderful, you guys paid a wonderful tribute to him coming on this show and talking about him and just, you know, You should be proud of yourselves.
Thank you, Grace, for allowing us.
Oh, my pleasure. I love you, too. You know that.
You know.
Yeah, we love talking to you, Grace.
I know. You have a great show, and you have a great heart. That's why you're special to us.
Well, you're very special to me, too. And you guys made me an honorary CAG nerd. What can I say?
Yep.
I feel very proud of myself for that. Okay, so I think we are going to stop. We did so much, and you guys will enjoy. If you haven't heard the first part, like I said, I'm going to post that along with this part so you can kind of, you know, because we discussed so much the first part. And it'll be fun. It's like just connect the dots, get through it, and we go through Mr. Cagney's life, who was he was an amazing actor, the best crier I've ever seen, man or woman alive.
I'm glad you said that.
He was.
It's true.
Man or woman. Really, nobody did it real. Real men do cry.
He did it all.
Real men do cry.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Because at that time, people were like, no, men don't cry. Well, he did.
Yeah.
And you didn't think any less of him for it. You loved him more.
No.
You know?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, everybody, so this has been Dana DiCarlo, my pals, and Lisa Sanita, and you guys go to TCM and check this out. That's so cool. You haven't seen it yet, right, Dana? You got to get off.
No, I haven't. I got to check it out.
Yes, and they have this wonderful book that you can check out on TCM or Amazon or anywhere else. And it's Dana DiCarlo and Lisa Sanitos, Conversations with Cagney, The Early Years. You're going to love it. I mean, this is like verbatim. And, you know, they like tell it like it is. There's no BS. It's just like talking. And you're like, you're in the room with Jimmy and Billy and hearing this conversation. It's a really good book. You guys did a great, great job.
Thank you. We had a thrill doing it.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Grace.
You are so welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Of course.
Thank you.
I love you guys. And check them out. And like I said, you can listen to part one as well. It's a very, I thought that was a really great show. So thanks, everybody. Be safe. And till next time, True Stories of Tinseltown. Dana and Lisa, thank you. Bye, everybody.